familiar verse of Scripture. Verse 13. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? Is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under the foot of men. As we all know, this is a portion of Christ's Sermon on the Mount. Matthew gives the fullest account recorded in Matthew 5 through 7. Luke gives us some bits and pieces of the sermon. By way of background, back in Matthew chapter 4, in verse 23, Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. So he's preaching, he's healing, and verse 25, and there followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee and from Decapolis, from Jerusalem and from Judea, and far beyond Jordan. Then in Matthew's gospel, we see that the next scene is Matthew 5, verses 1 and 2, and Jesus is upon a mountain, and he's preaching, and again, Matthew records the actual sermon. But if we go over to the book of Luke, and Luke gives us a little bit more detail leading up to Matthew 5, 1 and 2. In Luke's account, in chapter 6, verse 12, he tells us that Christ went into a mountain to pray, and he continued in that mountain all night in prayer. After an evening of prayer, in verse 13, Jesus called unto him his disciples, and of them, the disciples, he chose 12, whom he named apostles. Following that, in verse 17 of Luke, chapter 6, Jesus, the 12, and the disciples descend from that mountain. And we see in verse 17 that they stood in the plain. That is, they stood upon flat land. And we read in verse 17, and a great multitude of people out of all Judea. Again, Jesus, the apostles, the disciples are in this plain. They're no longer in the mountain. From the sea coast of Tyre and Sidon, which came to hear him, and he healed and to be healed of their diseases. And they that were vexed with unclean spirits, and they were healed. And then we see in, as these people come, Jesus heals this multitude, heals many in the multitude. Verse 19, the multitude begins to press upon him, and the whole multitude sought to touch him, for there went virtue out of him, and he healed them all. And that's what brings us to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 1. That's where Matthew would pick up his account. And so we see in Luke's account, these multitudes are pressing in on Jesus Christ. And Matthew says, and seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, that same mountain he's come down from. And when he was set, so he didn't go all the way up into the mountain, of course. He went a little ways up to get away, to get some space between him and these multitudes. So we see that by putting Matthew's and Luke's account together. And we see in Matthew 5, verse 2, he opened his mouth and taught them. So the sermon that he preached had special application to the 12, to the apostles. It had application to all those disciples that were there. And everything that was said was spoken in the hearing of the multitudes. So really you need to look at it as three groups of people. You have the apostles, you have the disciples, you have the multitude. In the sermon, Jesus presents a portrait. He draws a picture, a word picture of a true disciple of Jesus Christ. In the sermon, he preaches on how they ought to think. He preaches on how they ought to act. And you will act according to how you think. He preaches on how they ought to react to life in this cursed world. What the Sermon on the Mount offers is instruction on how to live. On how to live the Christian life in this world. How to live as people of God's kingdom. Jesus said in John 18, verse 36, concerning his kingdom, "My kingdom is not of this world." And he's talking about a kingdom way of living here in the Sermon on the Mount. And the thing we have to remember is, my kingdom is not of this world. So this kingdom way of living, this way of living that Jesus is presenting, is foreign to the world. It is foreign to the carnal mind. The principles that Jesus lays down in the sermon is not according to the world's pattern. It is not according to the world's thought process. The Sermon on the Mount is a description of what the child of God should be. And it really is the most comprehensive statement in all the Word of God concerning the child of God's role in life, and how the child of God is to live. It serves as a litmus test to measure our own spiritual development. We can look at ourselves in the Sermon on the Mount. But it's important that we realize but the Sermon on the Mount is not merely a set of rules. You can see that as you read it. But it's a life. It's a life to be lived. It's a life that you and I are to live. And the whole sermon is a call for this radical kind of living. It's radical to the world. It's foreign to the world. In verses 3 through 12, he speaks of the character that a child of God must possess in order to live this life. It's commonly known as the Beatitudes, which is a good title. It's not in the Bible, but it's a good title. Be of this attitude. And as you read verses 3 through 12, the child of God must be this. If the child of God does not measure up to verses 3 through 12, you can't do the rest. Verses 3 through 12 is the foundation of this life, and it concerns who we are. It concerns being something. It's what the Lord has made us when He saved our soul. And then in verses 13 through 16, He speaks of the function of the child of God in this world. And again, we can only fill that function if we fulfill the characteristics of verses 3 through 12. Verses 13 through 16 give us the purpose of the child of God in this world. And that brings us to our text. Ye are the salt of the earth. Now again, that's spoken in the hearing of the multitudes. That certainly does not apply to the multitudes. They were not the salt of the earth. It does apply to the 11, and it does apply to the disciples. So it applies to the Lord's church, and it applies to Christianity in general. Ye are the salt of the earth. We have been left here to be the salt of the earth. In other words, we are to function as salt. And that's our message tonight, simply being salt. You cannot function as salt unless you are salt. Again, this is about being. The whole sermon is about being. It's not just following a set of rules. It's about being. It's about being. Ye are the salt of the earth. So as saved individuals, we have an earthly function. Ye are the salt of the earth. Literally, that would mean ye and ye alone are the salt of the earth. If you are saved, you are the salt of the earth. Now, we've pointed this out before, but the first thing we need to remember here is salt. Though we think of salt, it's just a common thing. Salt is a miracle. It really is. You are the salt of the earth. Salt is composed of two poisons, chloride and sodium. Both are poisons. Both will kill you if you digest them separately. Chloride and sodium. But you put them together, you have salt. That's a miracle. How you can take two poisons, put them together, and you don't have poison. That's miraculous. You are the salt of the earth. Every child of God is a miracle. And every child of God that is living has been left here upon this earth. To be what? To be salt. You are the salt of the earth. Now, when people look at salt, we'll just think about table salt for now. You don't think of it as a miracle. You just don't. When the world looks at God's people, they don't see miracles. They really don't. It doesn't cross their minds that we are a miracle. Now, in our society, when we think of salt, we think of that little bottle on the table with holes on the top of it that we use to put on food. But salt is much more. We don't look at it as a miracle. And the world doesn't look at us as a miracle. Now, if we were to live in Bible times, people had completely different perspective concerning salt. In Bible times, it would have been one of the most important and valuable elements in their culture. It was extremely valuable and had a very, very important function. And Christ says to his people, ye are the salt of the earth. Salt was so important in Bible times that sometimes it was used for money. Now, you and I could not imagine using salt for money. But the Roman soldiers of Jesus' day at times were paid with salt. And that's where we get our word salary. It comes from the Latin word salarium. It was their wage. They would receive some salt. So it was very important. If you were a Roman soldier, that was how you were getting paid. It's very important, very valuable. So if you're saved, no matter what your place is in the world, and no matter who you are the salt of the earth. In other words, that is your function. You are to function in life as salt. That is your purpose. Your purpose in life is you are salt of the earth. Now, the nature of salt is that it is essentially different from the medium in which it is placed. And the truth is, salt gets all of its qualities, all of its working qualities come from this fact that it's different. That it's different. You are the salt of the earth. When Christ says that, he is saying to them, he's saying a lot of things, but he is saying, you are different than the world. And if you're going to function properly, you have to maintain your difference. We should not have to strive to be different. That's where you get weirdos. People who aren't saved, but they want to convince themselves and convince everybody else that they are, so they try to be more spiritual than God. And they enter into conversations such as, is it scriptural for a church to use a baptistry, or do all baptisms have to be in river? Stop it. Just stop. It's ridiculous. But that's where we are today. People are in a contest to see who can be the most spiritual, and they come up with outrageous things. We are different. We don't have to try to be different. You only have to try to be different if you're not different. But we are different. We don't have to try to be different. We are different. That is, the way we live is different. That's why, again, going back to verses 3 through 12, those things make us different. To be poor in spirit makes us different than everyone else. So salt has its qualities in being different. So if we are saved, we are different from everybody that is not saved. We are a separate and unique people. We have been made separate and we have been made unique by the saving grace of God, and that is to be obvious in our life. And it is to be clearly recognized in our life, and I believe it will be if we truly are different. If we've truly been saved, the difference will be seen. And if it's not, you have another problem. Salt speaks of the function of a child of God in this life. So the word salt speaks of the relation of the child of God to the world in which they live. Ye are the salt of the earth. We have a relation with this earth. We are the salt of the earth. That is, we're different than the earth, and our function is seen in our difference. So ye are the salt of the earth. And again, that's true no matter what the season, no matter what the place, no matter what the circumstance of our life is, Nothing changes this fact. Ye are the salt of the earth. Wherever we go, that is our that is to be our function. That is to be our purpose. We are the salt of the earth. Those words should dictate our attitude toward the world. We are the salt of the earth. It ought to dictate our life in the world. So let's look at, consider some things about salt. And again, remember, ye are the salt of the earth. Salt is necessary for health and for life. It is essential to the well-being, to the very existence of those who live in very hot climates. It is necessary for proper body metabolism. And that is why people who work in very hot climates find it necessary to take salt tablets. It's a necessity. It is a necessity in life. And we are the salt of the earth. That is, our life is to contribute to spiritual health, spiritual vitality, spiritual well-being of society. Our life is to contribute to the spiritual well-being of society. The responsibility of every child of God is to live in such a way that they contribute to the well-being of society. For those who are members of one of the Lord's churches, your life is to contribute to the well-being of that church. You are the salt of the earth. Your function is to contribute to the health and vitality and well-being of lost people, but also of saved people. Salt is a preservative, of course. People of Jesus' day would use salt. It was a preservative. It was very vital to their way of life. Obviously, they weren't as privileged as we are with refrigeration, so salt was very, very important in their ability to preserve their food. And the salt would be rubbed into the meat before it was stored, and that, of course, would hinder the process of decay. So one of the functions of salt is it prevents decay. One of the functions of salt is it wards off rot. Ye are the salt of the earth. The world is full of corruption. The world is full of disintegration. The times in which we live, it is a time of godlessness, a time when most live sinful and rebellious and ungodly, degrading lives, but yet we're different. We're the salt of the earth. We live in a world of defilement. We live in a world of wickedness. We live in a world of abomination. We live in a world of blasphemy and degradation and heresy. All these things are a way of life everywhere we go. We live in a society that is characterized by adultery and fornication and immorality and uncleanness and idolatry and hatred and strife and lying and cheating and stealing. And the Lord knows all about the world, and He knows all about the times in which we live. And He says to each one of us that are saved, you are the salt of the earth. Our lives are not to contribute to the decay of society. Our lives are to prevent, are to slow the decay of society. So the life of a true Christ follower contributes to the preservation, not the downfall of society. But how do we do that? By maintaining our difference. If we become the world, then we're part of the corruption. We're part of the decay. We're part of the problem. So we have to maintain our difference. You are the salt of the earth. And that is to have a profound effect upon our corner of the world. God has put each one of us in different places. And wherever it is He puts us, we are the salt of the earth. That is, we're not to contribute to the decay. We are not to contribute to the decay of our homes. We're to be a preservative. We are not to contribute to the spiritual decay of the lives of others. We are the salt of the earth. But that can't always be said of God's people. Many times God's people, they lose their difference. They become like the world. They become like their family. They become like their friends and their loved ones and their neighbors. And they lose their function, which is to be a preservative. But you have to be different. Salt is for cleansing. Not only does it draw putrefying matter out of meat, but it also has cleansing ability. We know that Elisha cleansed the waters of Jericho with salt. We see in Ezekiel that newborn babies were washed with salt to cleanse, to disinfect their bodies. Salt has a very powerful cleansing effect, and Christ says you are the salt of the world. Our lives are not to contribute to the filth. Our lives are to have a cleansing effect. Our lives are not to have a polluting effect. We're not to bring pollution into our homes. We're not to bring pollution into our church. We're not to bring pollution into the lives of others. We're to be salt. Our lives are to have a cleansing impact. Salt is for healing. In Bible times, there were no Rite Aids, there were no Walgreens, there were no drug stores. So if someone was injured, they were wounded, they were bathed in salt water. And it was a sterilization agent. The life and influence of a child of God. Same thing. Our life and our influence should help and not hinder those who have broken hearts and those who have broken lives and broken homes. Our lives are to heal, provide healing, just the way we live. Only the Lord can heal, but He can use the life and example of a child of God to bring healing. Our lives ought to perk up individuals. Our lives ought to strengthen others. Our lives ought to edify others. Responsibility of every child of God is to live in such a way as to have a healing and strengthening effect in the lives of others. Not to bring others down. You are the salt of the earth. Not to bring others down into the ditch. But our lives are to be healthy. Salt is, of course, you and I know very well, is for seasoning. It unleashes flavor. We see the offerings and the sacrifices were flavored with salt in Leviticus chapter 2, verse 13, and Ezekiel 43 and verse 24. And just as salt fires up the taste buds, so too God's people. Our lives ought to be appealing to others. The life and influence of a child of God should not be dull, tasteless, and bland. We are the salt of the earth. And the responsibility of every child of God is to live in such a way as to cause God to be noticed. To cause God to be noticed in our lives. Wherever our corner of the world is, that's our function. God is to be noticed in our lives. Salt has a penetrating effect. It will penetrate. It will infiltrate whatever it touches. It's an aggressive substance, and Christ says, you're the salt of the earth. In other words, we should be an active force in our corner of the world, whether it be family, whether it be home, whether it be... It doesn't matter. Every child of God has a responsibility to make a positive difference wherever we go. That's what salt does. You are the salt of the earth. We may be here today, we may be over here tomorrow. Place does not really matter. Ye are the salt of the earth. That is, wherever you go, we are to make a positive difference. And how do we do that? By being what God has made us, a child of God. Just being what we are by the grace of the Lord. Salt changes things. And Christ says, you are the salt of the earth. Salt, of course, can make one thirsty. As God's people, again, we need to be that. We need to look right. We need to act right. We need to talk right. We need to do everything right. You are the salt of the earth. And when we look right, talk right, act right, behave correctly, we have the ability to create a thirst for Christ in the hearts of those who are around us. No one should look at our lives and say, if that is a Christian, I don't want anything to do with it. No one should look at our life and be able to say that. They may be able to look at our life and say, I don't agree with the way they live, but they should not be able to look at us and say, if that's how a Christian is, I don't want to be any part of it. If that's how member of Home Baptist, if that's how the members of Home Baptist Church are, I'll never go there. That's a terrible testimony. So they ought to look at our lives. And though they may not appreciate the difference, they ought to be able to see there is a difference, but not be able to say, if that's a Christian, I don't want any part of it. That's how we have to be careful at all times. How we react in situations, because it only takes one time. And a lost sinner for the sake of an excuse, will hold on to that one thing until they die. Well, 60 years ago, he said such and such to me, and if that's a Christian, I don't want anything to do with it. Our lives ought to cause people to say, you know, I wish I had what they had. Their life is together. And it's not in the dysfunction that we live in today. The world ought to be able to plainly see. You know, I wish my life was like that. But sadly, many of God's people are just as dysfunctional as the world. Salt can be an irritant. You pour salt into a wound. You get salt in your eye. It'll be irritating. It'll be painful. It'll cause uneasiness. And to those who are determined to live in wickedness and in abomination and in rebellion, the life of a godly individual can be very irritating to them. You don't have to say anything. All you have to do is walk in a room, causing them great uneasiness and pain. When people are living in sin, our very presence ought to cause them uneasiness and pain. It's not our goal to be an irritant to them, but our life itself. If they are determined to live in ungodliness, if they are determined to pursue that which is an abomination, our very presence will be an irritant to them. And that's why you won't have to separate from them. They'll separate from you. I mean, if something's an irritant, I'm getting away from it. Again, we do this by being different, by not conforming. God's people conforming to abomination is not what we're here for. Our very life is to be an irritant. And way too many of God's people have gotten, whether they realize it or not, caught up with political correctness. And what they end up doing is putting their stamp of approval on things they have no business approving. Then notice in Matthew 5:13, there is a danger. You are the salt of the earth, but if. So this states a possibility. If is a possibility. So those two words, but if, states a possibility. Concerning what? Concerning the salt. Ye are the salt of the earth. But if, and then what follows is a word of warning concerning a danger, the disgrace, the disaster, the tragedy concerning one's influence and testimony. Notice what it says, but if the salt have lost. So there is the dangerous possibility that the salt lose something. The word lost conveys the idea that something's missing. Conveys the idea of something that's gone away. Something that's absent. Something that's been forfeited. But if the salt have lost. Lost what? His savor. Not savior. But savor. Saltiness. If the salt loses its saltiness. If the salt ceases to be salt, if the salt becomes like its surroundings, again, the effect of salt is found in its difference. The savor of a child of God, what is that? It's Christ-likeness. That's our savor. Christ-likeness. And to lose that, we cease to become salt. I didn't say we cease to become saved, but we cease to function. We lose our testimony. You lose your testimony, you lose your influence for good. You lose your impact. And there is disaster. And there is tragedy. And what is it? It is henceforth good for nothing. Once the salt has lost its saltiness, it's no longer salt. Once the salt has lost its saltiness, it's good for nothing. It's useless. It's useless. The phrase good for nothing simply means that it's lost its force. It's lost its influence. It is no longer fulfilling its function as salt. And since we are the salt of the earth, that is a tragedy. To lose our savor. It speaks of the one who has lost their soundness in the faith. That's losing your savor. It speaks of losing holiness of life. And when the individual does that, when they lose their savor, that individual will do more harm to the Lord's work than any lost person out there. They become good for nothing. And sad to say, the average so-called Christian in the average church is almost cannot see the difference between them and the rest of the world. They have lost their savor. If we lose the qualities of Christ's likeness, it's those qualities that make us distinct. If we lose those and become the society around us or the people around us, we no longer have a positive impact. For someone to have lost friends that sit around and drink and curse or whatever they do, and for a Christian to come up with this mindset, well, you know, I just want them to feel comfortable around me so I do the same thing. You're good for nothing. You're useless. The Lord puts you, if you're saved, the Lord puts you here to be salt. And you're to make a difference in their life. Not to concern yourself, well, I don't want to make them uncomfortable. We shouldn't say ignorant things. But if just living our life makes them uncomfortable, so be it. We owe no apology to anyone for such a life. So, to lose our savor means we no longer fulfill our function. We're no longer an influence. We're no longer a testimony for God. And why are we here? They lose their ability to contribute to the spiritual well-being of the unsaved. Again, the unsaved may not appreciate the lives that we live. But we ought to be the ones they call when they have a problem. And when they need prayer, we're the ones they call. Because we're different. So this is a very dangerous thing to lose our savor. Instead of their influence being for good, their influence now is for bad. It's sad when you and I have to apologize for the lives of others who profess to be saved. That's sad. And I'm sure we've all had to do that from time to time. Lost person says, well, you know what they did? And you say, well, I'm sorry, they shouldn't have done that. You know, God's people aren't perfect. But hopefully we're not the ones that people have to apologize for. You're the salt of the earth. What a privilege. What an honor. What a responsibility. You're the salt of our part of the earth. Wherever I go, I'm to be salt. Wherever you go, you're to be salt. I live in my house. You live in your house. You go to your place of work, and we go to our various places. We don't all go to the same places. But wherever we go, we are to be salt. We're to be salt in our home. We're to be salt as a spouse. We're to be salt before our children. We're to be salt before our grandchildren. We're to be salt before our friends and our neighbors and classmates and co-workers, and on it goes. We're to be salt in the church. That's what we're here for. To be the salt of the earth. Are we fulfilling that function? It is a God-given function. And again, how do we do that? By simply, if we're saved, simply being what God has made us when He saved our soul. We don't have to add on a bunch of stuff to increase our spirituality. Just be what God made you, a child of God. He made you different. His power is in your life. Be that, and you'll be salt. People today, they find it much easier. Just give me 10 steps. Well, that's a lot easier than being. That's the key. It's living the life. And the world can see that very quickly. The world can pick out the pretenders. And they become a very bad testimony, and the world loves to use those individuals to identify all of God's people, because that makes the world feel better. We know why the world does that. But my point is, we shouldn't give them the opportunity in our lives to do that. They can make fun of us for going to church. Our neighbors notice that we leave on Sunday mornings, Sunday evenings, Wednesday evenings, and they may get together and they may make fun. That's fine. Just so they can't say, boy, I don't want anything to do with Christianity if that's what it's about. Can't give them that opportunity. God help us to be the salt of the earth. It's a wonderful way to live life. Brother Tim, if you come and lead us verse